Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. The What True Next podcast helps you build a TBR of future favorite books. In each episode, Lori Amin interviews authors and book influencers to recommend books they loved for you to pick up today. If you're an avid reader, always looking for your next great read, then this show's for you. Hi, Laura. Welcome to What True Next podcast.
Hi, Laura. Thanks for having me back. I am so happy to be here and talk with you about some books that I have loved lately.
Oh my gosh, I am so happy to chat with you. We've been chatting up a storm before we started. So yeah. Tell us where you've been up to. Tell us what's going on in Wisconsin.
Sure. Well, life in Wisconsin is going great. I have three teenagers. Two of them are, well, they're twins, and they're both sophomores in college. And I still have a son at home who's a junior in high school, and he keeps me on my toes.
Yeah.
And I've got a great husband who indulges all of my bookish loves. And he like literally trips over the stacks of books I have all over the house. And he's so uncomplaining. So I'm very lucky to have him. And I've got my little sausage dog, my little dachshund, Lucy, who I've talked about before, but I always feel like I need to mention her because she brings me so much joy and is such a stress relief dog.
Yeah.
And I'm so inspired by her that in my debut middle grade novel, which you and I have talked about before, but it's called Crossing the Pressure Line. It came out a year ago. I actually incorporated a wiener dog into the plot based on my own dog. So I'm a huge fan of little dachshunds. And I've just been busy hiking, reading, walking. I love to go explore the state parks here in Wisconsin. They're beautiful, especially this time of year. And yeah, that's what I've been up to. Lots of reading, lots of writing. I hope to have news soon on my second manuscript. So fingers crossed about that. I've been working on that over the last couple of years. So that's been a real labor of love.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited for your second manuscript, but I didn't know you had a wiener dog. I had a wiener dog when I was growing up. So I actually did. I had a lived for a couple of years. A frog killed him. It was very sad. But, you know, but we did have a wiener dog and they're so cute. I want one of those.
I love wiener dogs. Then maybe you and I have not talked about wiener dogs before, but I feel like I'm always talking about my wiener dog because I think if you're a dachshund lover, like you're my people. Because they're
ended up getting a basset hound a few years later, which is kind of like the same like long body, and so that was our last dog actually that my parents no longer want to have dogs and pets because it's the grief is terrible. So but yeah, so we're fans of these like short dogs who just like just chill, you know, sleep and do like and just like indulges us, you know, with life.
Yep, that's my dog. That's Lucy. She's actually, as we speak, she's sitting here next to me in her dog bed, totally asleep. I mean, she just pulls herself into a tiny little tight circle and sleeps like all day. I mean, she's a riot.
Yeah. And you're like, you can run fast and you're just like, no, we're gonna take her, we're gonna strut around, we're gonna take it easy.
Yeah, it takes us 20 minutes to like get up to the top of the block and back when we walk. I mean, she walks at like a snail's pace, but when you have legs that are only 2 inches long, that's I guess how it's supposed to be.
So awesome. All right, so let's chat some books. So what kind of books do you have to recommend to us today?
Okay, well, what I love about you, Laura, is that you know that I love literary fiction. Yep. And so, and I read across a lot of genres, but literary fiction is kind of always where my heart is. And I really appreciate the fact that you love to have me on to talk about, you know, some of my favorite literary fiction books that have come out. So there are five that I wanted to talk about today. And all five of them are written by women. Mm-hmm. And all five of them feature main characters who are women who find themselves in really bad spots. Like they're all in serious pickles, whether it's because of a decision that they made or because of someone else's bad decision. they all have to pivot and use their wits and their common sense to get themselves out of the holes that they are in. And interestingly, as you and I have talked about before, I really love sort of like dark, serious books, but I am bringing in a few books today. It's a nice mixture of pretty serious and then some really funny stories. So I'm glad for that balance. And so I hope that your listeners will be able to, you know, find one of these books that really appeals to them.
Oh my gosh. So I'm excited. Let's get started. Yeah.
Okay. So the first book I'm so excited to talk about today is called The Net Beneath Us by Carol Dunbar. And you might not know her name. That's because she's a debut novelist. Her book, The Net Beneath Us, is her first, and it's luminous. It is so beautiful. It takes us off the grid in far northern Wisconsin, where we meet a young mom and wife whose name is Elsa. And Elsa has just experienced the unthinkable when her husband is injured in this horrible logging accident that ends up throwing Elsa's entire existence into question. So Elsa and her husband, you know, when the book opens, they live on this very remote piece of land, which actually is inspired by the author Carol Dunbar's own life. She and her husband and their two teenagers live like off the grid. To get electricity, they have to use a generator. And when I say that her driveway is like miles long, like I mean that literally, like there's no popping out the front door and grabbing the mail, you know, out of the mailbox. Like she has to like walk or take her car like 2 miles down the road to get to her mailbox. So she has a really interesting perspective in real life that she incorporated into her novel. So Elsa, her main character, may or may not be cut out for this really hard scrabble kind of life. But in the story, in The Net Beneath Us, she really defies the odds. She digs deep inside of her and comes to care for her husband and her two little kids in ways that are extraordinary. Like as I'm reading this book, I'm sort of gasping and my heart is breaking and tears are springing to my eyes. It is so exquisitely written. It's a tough read, right? But Elsa as the main character does exactly what I said before. Like she gets herself out of this hole that suddenly her life has become. And it's unforgettable.
I am excited for this. It's so different. It's like, I would not think of that. And I'm like, oh yeah, that would be an interesting book to just dive into.
It's so good. It gives me goosebumps thinking about it. It's really good. So.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about the next book.
Okay, switching gears entirely to book number two, The Society of Shame by Jane Roper.
Okay.
So this one is hilarious. So Roper's main character is this rather mousy woman, and her name is Kathleen Held. And Kathleen finds out that her politician husband is having an affair with with one of his young staffers, which is just so cringeworthy, right? But she finds out about this affair in the opening scene in the book, and I'm not giving anything away. This is, you know, if you pick up the book, it's right in the front cover. She finds out about this affair on her front lawn of her home, where at the same time she suffers a menstrual disaster, I will call it, that ends up making national news. So I'm not going to tell you what the menstrual disaster is, but it's hilarious. So Kathleen finds herself in the spotlight suddenly, and she does not want to be in the spotlight, but she becomes like this unwitting new leader of this new movement called hashtag Yes We Bleed. Okay. Which is so funny. So her obsession kind of grows with maintaining her popularity online. But at the same time, the most important relationship to her, which is with her preteen daughter, Aggie, really begins to suffer.
Yeah.
And I just feel like she's so relatable as she faces the perils of this sort of like online addiction, if you know what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. So The Society of Shame is hilarious, but it's poignant. It's also like dead serious in a lot of ways. And I think it's really, really relevant in these times of political turmoil and cancel culture. Yeah. I mean, there's so many things that Jane Roper satirizes that are just brilliant. So I loved this book.
Oh my God, I'm adding this one. I'm excited for this book. I'm definitely updating that one for sure because of like cancel culture and the online personality and all those different things. It's like, it's relatable to today's world.
It's so relatable. But what I love about it too, is that it's not like a flimsy story. There's a lot of meat and depth to it.
Yeah.
You know, even though it's kind of sparkly on the surface and you laugh and it, you know, you can see your own life playing out in this book. There's just a lot beneath the surface that Jane Roper digs into. So I think she's brilliant.
Adding this to the library.
Great.
All right, next one.
Okay, I'm switching gears again. Totally. We are going to talk about Wine People by Michelle Wilgen. So I love wine and I love watching how women navigate the world, especially when they are facing big time misogyny. So this book is spot on. Ren and Thessaly are the two main characters, and they are very ambitious wine distributors. I didn't even know there was this whole field, by the way, of like wine distributing. I learned so much about this whole field, but they work for a boutique firm in Manhattan. They're both in their 20s and they come from very different backgrounds. Ren is from a very modest, broken Midwestern family, while Thessaly comes from this clan of wine growers in California. So together they make a very unlikely pair, and they have some challenges between them. But when the company they work for begins to implode spectacularly, they learn that they are stronger together as a team. And so they really have to overcome their differences to unite and figure out where they are going to take their careers next. So in this beautiful book, there is deceit and drama and sex and sumptuous details of food and wine. And I loved reading it. It's Michelle Wilgen's fourth novel, and it's truly enchanting, and it's quite an examination of female friendship.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly in the corporate world, how women are depicted and how sometimes they butt heads, but other times they come together to unite forces.
This book is definitely, I've seen it around, but this book just bumped it up because I was like, it's set in New York, which is like, it's a very different space that I'm very familiar because, and then the expectations of the background that comes in and corporate and having these like expectations of wine, like it's so flashy and, you know, yep. Like it's this, there's certain, when you're in New York, there are certain jobs that you're really sexy or really interesting jobs. Like I actually happen to have one that's interesting, but like, it's a, like to get to that splashy job, you hear like you, I heard, I had a couple of jobs. They told me like a million girls wanted this job. It's very Devil Wears Prada. Like a million girls wanted this job and you're the lucky one. And yet you find yourself in a corporate like mayhem. You're like, mm-hmm. What am I doing here? You know?
Yep.
And so I am actually curious to hear, to read this book because it's like, it's going to bring flashbacks to that
idea
of like, you know, that job, you know, those jobs that you had.
That job, right?
That job.
I feel like all of us have had that job at one time or another. I mean, not necessarily in wine distribution.
Yeah, like it just changed the industry and have that. Like I did it, my first job out of grad school was NYU. Like I work as a college administrator and like NYU was the sexy, like the very like prestigious, like kind of like fun because you're like in the Greenwich Village and stuff like that. And my first week of experience was like, I was told like a million girls wanted this job and only you. And this is around the time the Devil Wears Prada came around. So it was very like, oh, like I am working with Miranda Priestly right now. Like, not really Miranda Priestly, but it was definitely one of those challenging, that sexiness. You're, like, trying to, you're green and you try to adjust yourself to that job. And maybe you realize the job did not fulfill you, and what are you going to do with it?
Right.
But it's definitely, I think there's like a, there's something to be said about a New York lifestyle that expects that, to have those sexy jobs.
These are definitely sexy jobs that these women have. And it's an interesting lifestyle until it's not, you know, until, and then this company implodes and it's just this huge disaster. But how they navigate that is really, really special, actually. I think if you read it, I think you'll enjoy it. And also, you had mentioned that you've seen this book around. It is one of the new titles from Zibby Owens' publishing line. You know, she started her own publishing imprint. And so I believe it's one of her first kind of rounds of books to be printed.
Yeah.
So Michelle has gotten a lot of really good publicity from that.
Very exciting. So, all right, let's talk about the fourth line.
Okay. Another funny one. There's No Coming Back From This by Anne Garvin.
Okay.
This book is just a burst of joy and confetti. I love it. So Anne Garvin's stories are always whimsical and they're always a little sad. And her fifth novel is no exception. Poppy Lively is her main character, and Poppy has just lost all of her life savings thanks to her very corrupt tax accountant. So she's freaking out, understandably. She doesn't know how she's going to pay for her daughter's college tuition. She doesn't know if she can even keep her house. So out of the blue, an ex-lover of Poppy's, and there's a whole great subplot there, he secures a job for Poppy working in the costume department on a film set in Hollywood. So Poppy takes off in her crappy minivan for California. What could go wrong, you ask, right? Yeah. Well, heads up, everything goes wrong. So Poppy's Midwestern charm is not universally adored as she thought it would be. And she bumbles her way through a series of quite hysterical, but also very touching and also very cringeworthy moments as she figures out what to do next in her life. But I will say, if you love movies, if you love the whole Hollywood vibe, this book is absolutely for you. Anne Garvin, the author, herself actually spent a good chunk of time researching out in Hollywood. She worked on set at both Universal Studios and Sony Studios in their costume shops and also on their back lots, so that she really came to this book with a great deal of knowledge about this whole costuming industry. And it's so riveting. It's really cool. And also, if you read the book, one of the characters is named Alan Carroll, and Alan is the actor, the lead actor for the film that Poppy is working on.
Yeah.
And Anne Garvin based this character of Alan Carroll, on Steve Carell. So she confessed that to me. And so now, like, when I imagine Alan Carroll, I picture Steve Carell, and I just love the book even more because I love Steve Carell.
Yeah.
So that's a little tidbit there for you.
Oh my gosh, I need to read this book. And that's another sexy job. It's another, like, totally. I don't know, there's something about sexy jobs and like your ill-equipped or ill-fitting jobs. And I think it just puts you in a place where either you swink or swim. Like, you're kind of like throwing, you're like, what am I going to do?
Yep. And that is so spot on what you just said for this book in particular, because Poppy doesn't really know anything about costumes when she heads out to this job. You know, it's her ex-lover who got her this job as like sort of a favor. So she goes out to LA like totally clueless, and she's resourceful and brilliant, and she's one of my favorite main characters that I've read this year. She's great. Awesome. So it's a great book. It's a fun one. And it's a book too, which is kind of rare for me, I think, that you could sit down and read in a couple hours.
Yeah.
You know, you just, it's great. It's beautifully written, but it goes down real easy. Okay. If you know what I'm saying.
Gotta love those. Love those books that we need.
Yep. Yep.
All right. And let's talk about your final book.
So the last one, okay, I'm going out on a dark note here. You know, I got to do it. The Vaster Wilds by Lauren Groff. So Lauren Groff, in my opinion, is one of the finest contemporary literary fiction writers out there. She has had so much critical acclaim for her books, and she's won so many awards. And her seventh book, The Vaster Wilds, is precisely what I would expect from her. It's searing, propulsive, and stunningly written. It's also dark. It's also pretty tough. So her main character is nameless. She's only referred to as the girl. And she is a servant in an early American colony in Jamestown, Virginia. So everyone in this colony is falling ill and dying, and they're sick and going hungry because it is a brutal winter that they are finding themselves in. And the girl is over it. So she makes the decision to flee the colony, which is no small decision. That's a really big deal when you are like a little girl and you flee the colony. You know, she doesn't know anyone outside of this colony, but nonetheless, she escapes into the night. And Lauren Groff's descriptions of her flight, like across the land, made me breathless. I don't know how Lauren Groff does it. She takes a moment in time and unspools it and adds so many sensory details. I mean, my hands were like sweating as I was holding the book. Like, is this girl going to make it? So she heads north and she faces, you know, terrible weather. She imagines that there are men coming from the colony that she's just left, like pursuing her. And then she's also face to face with what she calls the people of this place, which is her phrase for the indigenous people. Yeah. She doesn't know what to expect with the indigenous people. But this girl proves to be unbelievably scrappy and resourceful as she faces these huge monumental challenges, right? And as she makes her way north, as she makes her way across the land, at the same time, she's also recalling her own very humble origins back in the poorhouse in London, which is where she came from. So Lauren Groff's story is immersive and it's dark, but if you are up for the challenge, it is unforgettable.
Oh my gosh, this book's it's a little darker, it's a little pushing, so it might be like something I need to be in the right mood for it.
Exactly.
But it sounds fascinating just to experience that, like, and to think back at that time period as someone, you know, who is looking for a better life, and yet things are not the way they're supposed to, and you're facing so much unknown that it's, you know, it's like, the pain has to be so bad that she has to go to that place and to find relief. And it's not, it's like bad decision or worse decision and just taking the bad decision and escape.
Yeah. Yeah. And Lauren Groff is, every book I've read by her, she clearly does extensive research about, you know, the setting and the time and the place. Because I have to be honest, like this time in our country's history, I haven't really thought too much about, you know, back when it was even like before kind of like the, you know, the original colonies were established, like it was these colonies, for lack of a better word, but they were really awful with all of these people on top of each other. And one person gets sick and they all get sick and there's no food. And I mean, it's ghastly.
Yeah.
Harrowing is a good word, I think.
Yeah.
But it makes for great fiction. So there we go.
It does. These are great recommendations, Laura. So thank you so much for sharing them. So tell us where you can find you online.
I'm on Instagram at Laura at the library. And between each of the words, I have an underscore. Mm-hmm. So you can find me there. And that's where I do all of my bookish posts. I am also on Facebook, but I don't do a ton on Facebook. But if you're on Facebook, I'm Laura Ann Merritt Bird.
That's awesome. Me. Thank you, Laura, for being on the show.
Laura, I will come on your show anytime. Please have me back. I love chatting with you.
I love chatting with you too. So I'm excited.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share with friends, subscribe, rate, and review the show. This is the easiest way to support the podcast. For a list of books mentioned and other book recommendations, please visit whatyoureadnextblog.com. Thank you so much for listening and happy reading.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyoureadnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.